The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What'd you say, Adam? What are we selling?
Huh?
You were asking what?
What are we selling?
Oh, yeah. Well, you said we're going to do a commercial, and I said, well, what are we selling? I don't even know what the hell we're selling. What are we?
Well, we got all kinds of shit. We have...
we got a plethora. It's like a smorgasbord.
We've got shit, a shit smorgasbord.
Speaking of shit, you sound like you're in the toilet.
I know. Why do I sound like I'm in the toilet, Doug? Was your I have a loud voice, and if my voice is so loud that it gets picked up on your mic.
There it goes. Sounds like you got out of the urinal.
So if you go to mindpumpmedia.com, here's what you're going to find. You're going to find all of our MAPS programs. We put them all together in a super bundle. This is 9 months of exercise programming. Literally, from beginning to end, you follow up for 9 months, you'll get some amazing transformation. But that's not all. We've also got... But wait, there's more. We've also got a nutrition survival guide on there. We've got our fasting guide. We have the occlusion training guide. We have our No BS six-pack formula. This is a workout program just for your core and help you build a six-pack. And then Adam wanted to talk about some of our apparel. Like, he's wearing some of it right now.
But do I get a ShamWow?
ShamWow.
Yeah, we've got what?
Do they still sell those?
I don't know. Do they?
I don't know.
I think that guy died.
Did he die? No, that's the fucking OxyClean.
Oxy guy.
Yeah. We have hats. We have tank tops.
We have hats. We have tank tops. We have Angry Mike, the Angry Mike logo, which is sick. It's the really pissed off microphone. Looks like he's yelling. Black tank tops, white tank tops?
Yeah, we have black and white.
The new tanks are sick.
They are. Yeah. The hats are awesome. Those are flying off the shelves.
Yeah, we have three different colors now. And then we have all of our regular shirts now too. So now if you went through MAPS Anabolic and you never got a MAPS Anabolic shirt, so there's MAPS Anabolic on there.
Oh, those are green, black, and red shirts.
Yeah, so all those are on there.
And here's the deal.
And the gray, my favorite shirt is the gray V-neck. That's my favorite.
It's a handsome one.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm just going to be fucking real with the audience right now. I'm going to be straight with you, okay? Ooh. If you've been listening to Mind Pump for a while and getting all this wonderful free information that we're providing for you and it's benefited you,
yes,
and you haven't bought a goddamn thing, yeah, go on there and buy a shirt, yeah, okay? Just buy a fucking shirt. Just a shirt.
At least that's like saying, hey, I like you guys.
That's all you got.
I want you to keep doing this.
Yeah.
Right?
Buy something.
Yeah.
One little thing.
Yeah.
Okay?
Anything.
It's little, but it goes a long way.
It does.
You know what I mean?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Justin's kids got to eat.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Daddy's still got a dick slinging cock. You know what I mean?
What did you just say?
I don't know what that's.
I don't know either, but somehow it made sense in my head before I verbalized it.
That is the opening to this episode.
Yes, can we please?
Daddy's got a dick slinging. Can you please?
No.
Wait, hold on a second.
Fine.
That might be gay. Hold on a second. You have a dick slinging cock.
It's a dick slinging.
So your cock slings dicks.
I'm just talking about my own.
Right. So your dick, your cock,
yes,
slings dicks.
That might
be homosexual.
No, it's a slinging dick cock. I just have two names for one thing. That's all.
So for sure, at least probably 1 or 2,000 people just tuned out right now.
Yeah.
That's how we started up.
You know what?
Hi, Mom.
I think from now on, we need to hit them hard in the beginning. So that way the ones that stick and make it through that, those are the real listeners.
Yeah.
You know, I've noticed that some podcasts have like these, like they literally, you know, the ones that like have to like cut, edit, they doctor
all of them.
Yeah, most of them, right? Not all of them. A lot of them, though, right? I've seen them where they're smart because they know that typically a listener starts to trail off on an episode, so they leave like... They do like how TV does it, like, you know, like, or the, like, the news, you know, they show you like the crazy one, like, you know, lady gets, you know, head decapitated while she was running outside naked, clickbait, jumping rope, you know?
So yeah. One thing that I've heard other podcast viewers will say, and if you continue tuning in at the end of the episode, we're going to tell you blah, you know, some information.
That's what I mean. So like if you listen
to Mind Pump till the end of the episode, we're going to tell you the secret to burning body fat just off your stomach.
Whoa.
Oh my God. Yes. We should do
perfect.
We should just
make a bullshit.
Bullshit ones at the end.
Yeah. Listen, at the end of
it, all makes sense.
At the end of this episode, we're going to teach you a simple technique you can do at home for 2 minutes a day that will put 1 inch on your biceps.
Mm.
Thanks for listening. Yeah, some shit like that.
I love butt sex.
So What? Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. You didn't put it in that good, though.
Why did I put it in?
No, that was forced, out there. Dude. Let's give him another try.
You got it.
I don't have to have another
no,
try.
No, you did. It was the whole episode.
Listen, fucker, you lost the
yeah,
bet.
You lost.
me and Justin are the judges.
Champions.
You just threw that out there.
No, that was, yeah. There was no loop
well, you
to
know,
that.
You know I love butt sex.
It was a conversation.
You
know I love butt sex.
It needs to be part of.
Because you have to be in a string of a sentence, and then in the middle, you're just like, butt sex.
I want you to just keep going. I want you to say it in a way where everyone's gonna have to pause and rewind. Like, yeah. Did he just say that?
Yeah, what?
You know what I'm saying? What? Yeah. I used to do that when people are gonna think I'm an asshole. Well, some of them already do.
Okay.
When I used to sell, when I ran gyms and we would sell memberships, the sales process is pretty quick. You take a guest within 40 minutes, they buy or they don't buy, and you see lots of, especially big gyms, you see lots of guests sometimes. So you just boom, 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 boom. And you end up getting really good at it, and it kind of becomes super routine. And then, you know, you want to spice things up, especially with your salespeople.
I used to do this all the time.
I know you used to do this. Of course you did, because you're like I am. So we would.
Where do you think I came up with the idea?
Yeah. Did you learn it from the my people?
Dude, it reminds me of Super Troopers, you know, where he's like going like up to like ask them for their ID or whatever. He's like, what did he say? It was something like "fuck you."
I don't remember.
I used to tell my peers, right? So this is I used to role play with them, and I used to tell them, "Okay, listen, this is I want you to be like throw me off, you know, say use." I mean, and they would say like random weird shit to try and make me laugh or get off my game, and I would use whatever they'd say and reincorporate it into the sales pitch.
Oh, dude! So I would
just to practice my skill.
I would always do that. So I'd go in for a TO. Part of it was because I wanted my salespeople to have fun. Number two, I was kind of being an arrogant asshole by showing off that I could say something and that it wouldn't matter and that
and
the person...
You could still save it.
I could get away with it. Nobody would know. And then the third thing is it's hilarious watching your salesperson pick up on it and try not to laugh because I'm like, you know, the straight face.
Yeah.
So I would say things like, I'm presenting personal training and I'd be like, well, they're going to be doing lots of exercises to strengthen your core, your legs. They're going to help you squeeze your bonch, which is underneath, which is underneath your undercarriage, and it's going to strengthen your pecs. And people would be like you could see sometimes, like, wait a minute, this motherfucker just say?
I've heard this word, but then I would
I would keep going.
At that point, they're in normal talk. They're wondering in their head, like, wait, is it medical? Maybe that is a medical term. Yeah. I know I've heard that before.
Yeah. Or I'd say, you know, I'd say other stuff too. Like I'd use words like sphincter. Like a lot of people don't know what a sphincter is. Like that's a muscle in your butthole, for example.
Right.
And I would put that in I'd be like, well, when you're doing squats, it's important you squeeze your sphincter in your core to stabilize your body. Now, a lot of people would be like, huh?
Or the poo-poo comes out.
They'd be like, yeah, you do squeeze your core. Like, they didn't catch the first part, but the sales guy did, and he's trying not to laugh. Or she's not trying to laugh. So, yeah, I would do shit like that all the time. So, you guys know how I was getting, like, a really bad cold on Monday?
Yeah.
Guess what?
It's gone crazy.
It's gone.
Mm. Wow.
It's gone.
What'd you do?
So, here's my remedy for my cold. This is what I always do when I start to get it. But you have to catch it early. Very little science, by the way, is in what I'm about to talk about.
Okay, here we go. Homeopathic Sal.
I'm glad you announced that first.
Very, very little science.
Because I know how our people get. Yeah. Now when Sal says some shit, like,
remedy.
All of a sudden I see these like wave of people are all of a sudden doing it. I'm like, dude, this motherfucker over here. I'm going to keep him in line over here.
Oh, really? You see a whole bunch of people do it all of a sudden?
Yeah.
All right, so this is what I do. I enroll in every program that we sell.
You rub beeswax all over your chest.
I rub my left nipple counterclockwise. So as soon as I start getting the symptoms of a cold, as soon as I feel that, you know, that tickle in the throat, the sneezing, whatever, I do zinc lozenges every other hour. Now, there is some science supporting zinc lozenges. By the way, they have to dissolve in your throat. You can't chew on them and swallow because it's the zinc. The theory is that the zinc coats the throat and it prevents the rhinovirus, which is the virus that causes the cold, from adhering to your throat and replicating. That's one of what's favorite places to grow. So the zinc prevents it from adhering, so you just kind of swallow it and it goes in your gut and your gut destroys it. So zinc lozenges every other hour. I take elderberry 3 or 4 times a day. Elderberry has been shown in a few studies to be antiviral, in particular for influenza. Then I drink lots of teas that have things like astragalus in them. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. And other types of herbs for cold remedy. And I do this every 2 or 3 hours. And when I do this and I catch it early, my cold usually will last 2 or 3 days and then I'm good. If I don't do this, I get that long ass, that, you know, Adam cold that he has for an hour, for two months or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. No, it goes away.
Because I am. I'm the other way. I don't do any of that stuff. I'm so bad.
Yeah.
I just say, no, I'm not sick. I'm not sick. Rah! And then it goes away.
I noticed just a, I noticed a big difference just by me drinking lots of
self-talk.
Water. Like, because I know you're
laying. Is that your answer for everything?
It is. It is.
So it's like, drink lots of water.
Yeah. I, well, you know.
Every time. You know,
I want a better pump. Drink lots of water. Yeah.
No, well, it, this is something that, because we talked about
I'm
before.
My dick to grow.
How.
Water.
I just assumed that I drank a lot of water because I felt like I was, water's always around me. I always had a bottle of water. I'm always drinking out of the faucet. I drink a ton of times when I'm working out. So I just assumed
I was. Dad, I broke my arm.
Water.
Drink some more water.
Hurry, hurry, water him. Spray him.
Hey, bro, talk all the shit you want, but I guarantee there's a ton of people out there that are under drinking water and they have no idea. Because in my experience, most anybody that I've ever had track their water and report back to me what they're drinking was under consumed, yeah, grossly under consuming water.
There's something.
So
there,
talk some shit to me about that, but I'll tell you right now. When, and I've also, and notice when you're sick and you lay in bed all day long, do you have a half gallon of water
well,
next to you?
They're always like recommending you drink a lot of fluids.
Right. You know, you've heard that forever.
Yeah, forever.
But do you really drink a lot, or do you drink a lot compared to a guy who's sleeping in bed all day long? So it feels like a lot because you get up and you drink a glass or two. Yeah. You know, or do you really try and like when I try and flush a ton of water through me, it speeds the cold up. When I don't do that, it drags out forever.
Well, okay, so this might be what you're saying here. I'm going to be an asshole real quick.
Go ahead.
Here this might be what go. You're saying. Here and by go. The way, again, another disclaimer, I'm partially making some of this stuff up.
Okay.
But I believe that when you're slightly dehydrated, your mucus is thicker and it's going to you're going to feel more congested. And so drinking a lot of water may thin the mucus and allow it to flow through. And when you have a cold, the secondary infections that you get from a cold are because the mucus doesn't go through and it just builds up and then bacteria builds up in there and then boom, you develop something like a sinus infection. So what I just said makes a lot of sense. I have no idea if it's true.
Have
or
you
not,
seen that?
But
that,
it makes a lot of sense.
What's that called? That one device that like flushes
neti pot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So gross. I saw a commercial for that and it's like, it's so convenient. And this lady's like got it shoved in her nose. She's like,
I have one and I use it quite often and I hate using it.
He's talking about the neti pot, not just pot.
No, this is true.
Actually, the neti pot works.
No, it does.
No, they use it
I
in
have,
the hospital.
I have too. Allergies, so it's like when it's a godsend when it's so bad outside and windy, and I'm just like I'm red eyed and sneezing like crazy. I have to go flush. I have to go take the neti pot and do that, and then it gives me relief. But I mean, when it's really bad, it still gets me.
So
it does give me relief.
So I read a study on the neti pot, and it actually showed that. So there's contradicting studies. One showed that regular use of neti pot increased the frequency of sinus infections for some people.
What?
Now, right, and I think it might be because you're constantly flushing because
you're relying,
water and
relying
shit.
On it.
I don't know, because I know for me, I use a neti pot and it gave me the worst sinus infection of my life, and I'm wondering if it's because and the same reason, by the way, this is why blowing your nose too much might cause this as well. There's lots of little pockets in your sinus cavities, and it could be forcing mucus that might have bacteria into some of these pockets that it's not in there, and then it doesn't necessarily flush out and it builds up in there. They find this with people who blow their nose too much too. Like you blow your nose and cause so much pressure that it forces mucus into some of these pockets in the sinus cavity.
Captain Farmer blow
and
over
then
there,
it,
huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it builds up and then it can build
do
up
you,
into.
You know, Everett's like that. My roomie is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh,
always.
It's like a blowhorn. You can hear him on the, like downstairs. He can be in his bathroom with the door closed and you can hear him.
Bro, I shred through those tissues. Like, I have to get like four. I can't just get one. My wife's always like, why don't you use one? Because it like blows and it disintegrates. Because I'm just like,
horsepower right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I take, I'll do Sudafed and I think it's called Guaifenesin. I think that's the chemical name. Mucinex.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
And do those two combo right there, and that whole congestion thing is gone.
Well,
and you're hyper from the pseudoephedrine.
So what is so, you know, every nurse I ever trained always told me Sudafed was like the El Nana when it comes to cold medicine, you know? Do you know what it is in comparison to everything else? That's like always been the go-to.
Sudafed is the brand name of pseudoephedrine, which is ephedrine. Ephedrine reduces the production of mucus by the mucous membranes. So when you take it, it dries you the fuck out. You'll also notice that it'll dry out lots of other things in your body. So your eyes and stuff like that as well. So I think it reduces seminal volume. I don't know why I said that, but I do remember reading that.
So you got a dry this
is,
load.
This is the
they also make meth out of it too. Don't they?
A dry load.
Yeah.
This is the drawback to having a photographic memory is I remember shit I shouldn't. You know what I'm saying? Like, why did I say that?
I don't know.
We don't know.
We're all distracted.
Come on, it played its role. There was a look at. I just asked you.
Yeah, it reduces seminal volume. Why the fuck would I? Who cares? I don't need to remember that shit. Well, I want to increase it, not decrease it. I mean, just like you said before.
The impact of that, though. Ouch.
Here it is. Here's the eagle.
It's the motherfucking quaw.
The mother effing.
Quee, quaw.
Quaw.
Bring it, Doug. Give it to us hard.
Quaw. Here comes the first question.
Long. Jesus Narrows. How does alcohol affect recovery and muscle growth?
We hooking him up again?
Yes.
Yeah, why not?
Good questions. Get answers.
Listen. Do it. I don't give a shit who you are. You ask a good question. We're going to fucking talk about it on Mind
Pump. Put it up there.
We're going to talk about it on Mind Pump.
All day.
How does alcohol affect recovery and muscle?
It's the devil.
It definitely doesn't improve recovery and muscle. And too much of it will be negative on recovery and muscle. A regular normal amount, does it affect recovery and muscle? I haven't seen any studies that have particularly...
What does that even mean, regular normal amount?
Like, okay, you know when they have studies...
Like a beer a day or a glass of wine a
day?
Yeah,
you know when they go, 6 ounces of wine every single day is supposedly good for your health.
I've seen a lot of people in their 6 ounces of wine. I mean, putting in quotation marks.
You know that's just because...
It's a goblet.
It's just because it's got fruit in it, and that's the only reason.
It's fermented fruit.
That's the science they use behind it, is you get some antioxidant benefits from it.
Yeah, eat the fruit. Yeah. Don't drink the alcohol.
Well, I mean, there is some evidence showing that it might be something in the alcohol, but it's totally inconclusive. Here's the deal. There's no studies that show a regular, the recommended dose of wine or alcohol. There's no studies that show how it affects athletic performance, muscle growth, recovery, and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. All I can do is speculate off of my own anecdote and off of my clients and all the people that I've trained, thousands of people that I've trained. And I have never seen alcohol be a positive aside for the...
Resveratrol. But that's in a super concentrated form. That's the only one I've heard.
All the studies on resveratrol? Oh, fuck. You know how much wine you'd have to drink?
You have to concentrate the shit out of it for it to even make an impact.
No, it's not positive. You're not going to do any better from drinking wine. The only positive I could see from drinking alcohol is that you're stressed out as shit and you need to chill the fuck out. And there's a benefit to that sometimes. You have a glass of wine or, here's a martini. And now you're chilled.
Well, I think the biggest problem with alcohol too is what comes along with all of it. You know, rarely does anybody just have 4 ounces of wine by itself.
Yeah.
You know, or just one beer by itself. Like
it's like potato chips.
Yeah, exactly. It's with some nuts and chips
good.
Yeah, or you're washing it down with, four more right behind it. So the next day, you how do you normally feel after drinking? You drink a lot. How much do you? I mean, some people may try and say like, "Oh, I feel great the next day after drinking." Well, fucking enjoy that while that lasts, because eventually it makes you feel. Doesn't make you feel great.
I don't buy that though. I think that people who drink every day and they're like, "I feel fine," they have no idea that they feel shitty.
Well, that's
until they stop.
Well, that's just it though. We've talked about this before. Being addicted to anything, right? You think that until you get off or you stop, you don't realize how much it's like when people used to tell me too, like, "Oh, I have no time to work out. I just don't have time. I don't have time to make it." I'm like, well, you'll be blown away. Like, if you actually just force yourself to make time, you'll start finding more time. It's unreal what happens. I mean, all that really is because you have more energy. You move more. You get more things done more efficiently and faster. It's amazing. I always tell clients that, like, if they can just bite the bullet on that for a month and just sacrifice whatever it is they need to sacrifice to get in that hour gym workout, you'll be amazed at your energy levels and your productivity level, because you think you're normal right now, but you're not, so.
Well, I think too, I'm like, who thinks about drinking alcohol as a recovery, after a workout, something like that? Wasn't there some kind of study back in the day about beer and how it would help you recover? Like, you would drink it, you get the benefits from it, but then also it would help you to recover.
Yes.
Well, I think
beer has liquid in it.
Yeah.
It's got certain, it might have electrolytes in it, certain things in it. That doesn't mean that that's ideal.
Yeah.
If you were starving on a desert island, and you ate donuts, Pop-Tarts, and candy, they would show benefit. Oh, he's not starving anymore. He's surviving. Therefore, those things are healthy. No, It's because he had some fucking calories finally. I mean, alcohol, really, if you're drinking, let me put it this way. If you're drinking alcohol for the health benefits of it, you're doing it wrong. I mean, there's way better things you do for the health benefit. Now, if you're drinking alcohol because you like the taste, you're a connoisseur of it, you like to relax,
you chill out.
That's fine. That's totally fine. But don't you know, bullshit and be like, I'm doing it because it's
good not
going to
promote.
I think that's what he's alluding to too. Is because he's asking how does alcohol affect recovery muscle? I don't think he means necessarily like if you were to drink it to help you recover or build muscle. I think it's more like
how negative
if I'm somebody who likes to drink. You know, a beer or two every single night.
How much is it detracting from
exactly?
Your progress?
How much is it detracting from my progress?
I would say it is. It is detracting from his progress, and it's related to how much he drinks. Mm-hmm. So if you drink a little bit, it might detract a small amount, maybe not even noticeable. You start to drink 2-3 beers every night, it's gonna affect you big time in terms of your athletic performance.
Well, it's inflammatory for the most part. So yeah, you got to account for that.
Alcohol, by the way, any alcohol, any regular consumption of alcohol increases cancer risk. So, I don't like this whole like alcohol is a health food type of thing. I think that's very, very smart marketing. Yeah. And I think that they'll come up with certain studies that show certain markers get better. And it's a very popular headline in a newspaper or a website. You know, people who drink one glass of wine notice this one thing, you know, and everybody's like, oh, this is great.
Sells more Budweiser.
Yeah. Right.
The next question is from Derek Wurz. Have you ever had a client that was addicted to exercise?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
These are the hardest
clients.
Probably
more common than you would think.
These are the most difficult clients for me to train. In fact, mm-hmm. this is probably the only type of client that I would prefer not to train. It is so difficult to break people of this because they'll come to me, and it's usually that they've already worked out with another trainer. I had a young lady that did this. She was working out with another trainer. She came to me, metabolic damage. He beat the crap out of her with the workouts. She understood everything. I explained everything to her. This is what we're going to do. We're going to try and get metabolism to work again. We're going to try and eat this way to get your hormones back. And she understood it all. But in the end, she stopped working out with me. And I know why. It's because I didn't beat her up in the workout. She didn't get that addiction with me. Very difficult to break this because it takes a while for them to see their body start to respond well again because their body's so damaged from the shit that they did before. And so now they've got to hang out with me for 6 months to a year before they really see the big benefits of exercise. Mm-hmm. And for someone who's addicted to exercise, it's a very difficult thing to do, you know?
No, it's... And there's a lot of psychological stuff that's going on.
Huge.
For sure, too. There's more often than not, they have either some
like
sort
a
of...
punishing mentality.
It is. Yeah. It's the at least the ones that I've dealt with. And I've dealt with a lot. In fact, I don't shy away from these clients. You know, I talk about how Sal likes to... train a lot of the older population. I'm more of a fan of someone like this, a type A personality where they're, you know, they're go-getters and they hammer their lifestyle out at work. They hammer their lifestyle inside the gym and, you know, teaching them something because I can relate to that. I think I do a pretty good job of understanding what they're going through and stepping them through that. And I also know that they're also one of the ones I can really change and impact their lives when I finally break through. So it's a very rewarding client for me to take because I remember coming up through my training career and, you know, all the different, you know, hundreds and, I mean, all of us in here have trained thousands of clients, right? So, you know, you get everything. You get every type of person and condition and, you know, and I really enjoy this because of what Sal just said, though. It's my most challenging. But I enjoy that. It's the competitive side that I have of wanting to be better at my craft. So I like to take these people on because
how do you get them to break that addiction?
It's just like what we talk about with nutrition or anything else. That there's small goals, small things you're taking away from them now. Instead of adding things, you know, it's kind of like the nutrition concept. Like I'm not expecting you to go from this person who goes 7 days a week, you know, trains an hour at a time, high intensity working out to, okay, only 3 days a week. I want you to, you know, don't go to failure. It's like you have to slowly wing them off. And normally it's, I allow them to exercise as much. It's, I focus on the intensity first.
Do you find yourself having to point out like the small victories? Like, for example, I have a friend who she's, you know, kind of following some of my advice and she's getting frustrated because she's like, God, I used to be able to lose weight so quick. And now, you know, what I'm doing, what you're telling me, and I'm not. And I'm like, well, let's see. Before, you would do an hour of cardio a day, and you would eat nothing, and you'd lose weight, and then you'd gain it back, and you'd do this yo-yo thing. So now we're trying to fix your metabolic rate. I said, but let's just be clear now. You are exercising half as much because you're doing it right. You're stronger in the gym. You're eating more food, and you haven't gained any weight. Mm-hmm. So what does that tell you? We've now sped up your metabolism. So I have to, I find myself having to point those things out. And then, you know, of course, a light bulb went off.
Definitely do. Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Otherwise, yeah, they're going to like revolt because it's such a like base, like they base each workout almost on like its relevance for how their body's been reacting to it. So like for me, like I've had a couple clients, this is just as difficult, by the way, as somebody who, you know, has an intensive like eating disorder or something where, you know, they look for eating for some kind of like psychological benefit. It's the same kind of psychological benefit they're getting. It's just from moving. And so that's been their answer. So then they're going to want to drive that home to its fullest ability. And so it's just like Adam's saying, you have to really just like steer in a different direction, but you have to do it like one thing at a time. You take, you know, if they're like, I used to have people like they would train with me. And then after that, okay, I'm just going to do yoga, you know, nothing crazy. I'm just going to do yoga. I'm like, oh yeah. So you did yoga. Oh, I did the hot yoga. You know,
the most intense
one. Oh, it was super, you know, it was crazy. It was awesome. And then I'm like, well, great. Cause we were going to do a full, like comprehensive foundational, you know, compound lifting day. I was like, I'm going to go ahead and tone it down. No, no. I'm like, look, you're not doing like you're adding. Every time like we meet, you're adding something on top of this. And this is so.
So I have to account for that as a trainer.
You have to account for it. So I would do that. I would start scaling back the workouts and like almost like, you know, telling them, hey, well, if you're going to do that, then I'm going to do this.
Right.
You know, when you do this, I'll do this.
Yeah.
And so I would just like sort of push and pull with them because they're the type that's going to fight you the whole way until you finally have that breakthrough moment.
Yeah. I don't know if Derek is a trainer. Or not. Sounds like it's a trainer type of question. You know, part of this will come with just, you know, perfecting your craft. Like, you know, Sal talks about all the conditions and the things that these small victories. Well, part of when I started doing so many clients like this, I get a lot of clients like this. Matter of fact, the majority of my clients are like this. You start to attract these people because you get good at it, right? And I think that's why Sal has a lot of the elderly, right? So he gets a lot of these people that have aches and pains and conditions that other trainers couldn't help them with, and they meet Sal, and like he literally changes their lives, and he's very good at it, and he continues to perfect that. You know, with these type A personalities, I've learned to be ahead of their complaints or be ahead of their frustrations. So I already foresee that, you know, as soon as I give them this new goal this week of I want you to only walk for 1 hour here and do this and do this, I already know the feedback I'm going to get from him or her. And so I'm already telling them, so this is how you're going to feel. Mm-hmm. You're going to feel like, you know, this is this. And you're going to
text me like, it's not enough.
Yes, you're going to feel like that. And you're going to want to start to do this. And you're going to want to do that. But this is important that you follow this the way I'm telling you, is because there's a reason behind everything that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm closing before that, like, the objection would come up, right? Before they start bitching or complaining about they're not seeing the results they're used to seeing when they were going to the gym, you know, twice a day and doing that. Well, no shit. Starve your body and go to the gym twice a day. I can lose anybody 15 pounds in 1 week. That's not impressive.
You gotta stay in their head. You mentioned you gotta stay ahead of that by just like constantly dropping like that knowledge, that reassurance, because they need to be reassured, because it's like, you know, otherwise they're going to feel like it's a disservice. Like they're not going to get like what they want out of the experience.
Especially like those. And I'll tell you why I fell in love with those type of clients was once I got good enough at my craft that I could foresee that stuff and I could really help this, you know, type of person, was these people, when they do get the switches over, they're the best ones.
Yep.
They're the ones that are like,
those are the light
dial. Oh yeah. And you tell them to do something, boom, they change it to do it. They're not, because I'd rather have that than the fucking wavering person. Every time I see them, like, oh, I tried, but I forgot. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, you know, yeah, but we went out to dinner with my friends. And so, you know, and it was her birthday, you know, and oh, and my husband got a promotion yesterday. So, you know, fuck that, bro. I don't want that. You know what I'm saying? Like that, just, I can't help that person. Yeah. That person's got way more for the, you got a lot more to do before you come over. Let me help you out.
I think the two best clients, if you're a trainer and you're listening and you want to like have lifers and like focus on the ones that need to address pain, or like Adam said, the one that needs to be, you know, they're already type A, but then you have to win them over.
Yeah.
I think so that you could fit anything in that category.
Very good point.
Anna the Wise One, Can you really reset your hormones by intermittent fasting or detoxing?
God, there's so many things in that question that makes me cringe.
I know they do because you're resetting hormones. Don't even.
Yeah, there's so much shit there. Can you reset your hormones and detoxing? I fucking hate the word detoxing.
That sounds like one of those isogenic or like cleanse things. Yeah. Like that'd be in their like marketing brochure.
Here's the thing. Detoxing, let me tell you why I hate that term. Detoxing literally means you're full of toxic shit and you need to detox. If you're toxic, you need to go to the hospital. That's just a term that's thrown around by the fitness industry to sell you, I don't know, tea, supplements, powders. You know, you're going to feel like shit for the first month because your body's detoxing. No, you feel like shit because you're fucking drinking nothing but cayenne pepper juice, you know, for whatever and, you know, that kind of shit. As far as resetting your hormones is concerned, I don't like the term reset your hormones, but can you change your hormones with intermittent fasting and diet? Yeah, absolutely. If you eat improperly, your hormones will be affected in a negative way. Things like insulin, which is the easiest one to affect. You know, you want to increase insulin sensitivity and reduce insulin's ability to make your body store body fat. Definitely cut sugar out. And then the second thing would be to cut carbohydrates down. Mm-hmm. And then insulin becomes a lower load. And as a result of lower insulin, you have more growth hormone, which tends to be fat burning and, you know, nourishing and stuff like that. That's not saying insulin's bad. I'm just saying just one easy way you can manipulate your hormones.
Well, yeah, I understand. The point is that you're making is that you can manipulate your hormones. I mean,
totally.
We're constantly manipulating our hormones. I mean, when we get stressed, hormones, you know, are changing in our body. So it's not, that's an ever flowing, moving type of thing that we're always, you're trying to have optimal hormonal levels.
Yeah. You don't want one to be too high anyway, because that's not how it works.
Unless it's testosterone.
Well, yeah, but they want to interrelate. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's such an intricate, you know, way that they react off of each other. So
it's true.
Think about that, actually, testosterone is probably the one hormone that you could.
Like everybody could benefit from.
Overly high levels, right?
Well, not overly.
No.
There's still a balance
there.
There's obvious adverse effects of converting over to estrogen.
Exactly.
And other, like, long-term
effects. It'll switch.
Not just that. Not just the fact that it converts to all these other hormones, but it will affect other things like
Your natural hormonal production too.
And you could get prostate enlargement or more androgens.
From a natural perspective, not from a synthetic.
Yes, we're not talking about adding.
I'm talking about adding testosterone. I'm saying you could handle or you would want as much testosterone as possible.
I agree. Like you want to achieve that like higher level, naturally.
Well, the range is ridiculous. I don't know what the range is. Something like 200 to 1200 like that. Yeah, so. Yeah. That's a big fucking difference, like six times more testosterone and you're still considered normal or average. Here's the thing. If you're noticing that your hormones are off, and this is more common for women than men, although this happens with men also. Yeah, eat whole natural foods, bump your healthy fats, eliminate sugar, and reduce your carbs. You don't have to go no carb, just reduce them a little bit. And that tends to provide the body with the right building blocks for good hormones. But there's much more that goes into this. Get enough sleep every night is one of them. Mm-hmm. Lift weights properly is another one. If you don't get enough sleep and you lift weights improperly, you exercise improperly, that will negatively affect hormones as well.
Right.
Now, intermittent fasting is very effective in terms of fat loss. It's very healthy for you. However, if you do it wrong, you will increase your stress hormones too much. Going ketogenic for too long, for example, may reduce your thyroid output in some people. So it depends if you have issues with thyroid. You might want to be careful with a pure ketogenic diet. So it really depends on the individual. But I would say if you're eating a very good whole food, natural type of diet, you're getting adequate fats, and you're utilizing intermittent fasting properly, it should, for the most part, balance out whatever imbalances you may have with your hormones, so long as those imbalances were diet and lifestyle related, not genetic or disease related. If you have genetic or disease related hormone imbalances, changing your diet might help a little bit, but you probably need to go to a doctor and would need to supplement. As far as fasting is concerned, definitely a wrong way to do it. Definitely a right way to do it.
Yes.
We have a very inexpensive fasting guide that spells it out for you on mindpumpmedia.com, and so you can check it out there.
Milk Monsters is asking, how do you rank strength training, myofibrillar hypertrophy, sarcoplasmic hypertrophy for muscle growth?
Okay, so
versus. So which one is?
So the question is: so strength training would be
You're talking about CNS.
Yeah. So I think he's probably talking about central nervous system training. So strength both improve sarcoplasm within muscle, and bigger muscle fibers will contribute to strength. Working on strength will contribute to more, you know, myofibril hypertrophy and more sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. Increasing myofibril hypertrophy will contribute. So basically, they all contribute.
They all work together. Can you explain
the myofibril versus the sarcoplasmic?
Okay, so when he said strength training, that's the central nervous system. The central nervous system, we've used this analogy a million times. It's the amplifier, mm-hmm. and your muscles are the speakers. You're just making your amplifier more powerful, so it's giving more output to the speakers. So improving the effect of your central nervous system, its efficiency, effectiveness, and health will make you stronger in the gym. It'll make you stronger, period, anywhere. A real easy example of this is, you know, you could take an artificial central nervous system stimulant like caffeine, and you'll get a little stronger instantly. That's just because it makes it fire harder. We want to build it through training. Myofibular hypertrophy, these are the actual muscle fibers. So if you look at a muscle, if you look at a big muscle and you go down and look at it, you'll see that there's fibers that make up that muscle. Hypertrophy just means growth. So that would be thickening those fibers, which means when they contract, they're stronger, okay, through that process. Sarcoplasm is all the other stuff in muscle that makes up its size. So if you take out all the muscle fibers, there's still stuff in your mm-hmm, muscles. Mm-hmm. These are all the non-muscle fiber structures within muscles. Everything from the fluids in muscles, the energy that's in muscles, to some of the cross structures that are in muscle that make it. You can make that grow too.
Visually, it's the most, I think, that you see, right? Right. That's what the pump we all talk about.
Yeah. So when you get a pump is known as transient sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. In other words, you're temporarily increasing the sarcoplasm within your muscle while you're exercising. You get a pump, it grows. Then that sarcoplasm goes down, the blood leaves the muscle.
Which, just so you know, this is also how a lot of people write programs and show people to make people think that they're getting the most results by following a program like this that is focused on the pump. It's driven to get a pump, so you feel it and you see it because it's noticeable instantaneously. Yeah. Let's say this power lifter hired me out of nowhere and said, "Hey, I just want you to train me how you would train me. This is how I've been training. I've been a power lifter for a long period of time. What do you think we should do?" And I said, "Great, we're gonna go right into some hypertrophy training." And I put him on hypertrophy, and he's gonna be like, "Whoa!"
Yeah,
I mean, that's how I would rank these. The one most superior to the other is the one that you're not doing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you
you've been neglecting.
Excellent example.
Yeah. So if you are, because they all have huge benefits and are essential to building this optimal physique for not just performance but aesthetic and everything.
If you're not specifically training for each of these at some point in your training, you're missing out. You're missing a piece of the puzzle.
Oh, for sure.
And by the way, I don't know if Milk Monsters. I don't know what your name is. I don't know if he enrolled. I feel like he has MAPS anabolic because he literally listed the phases that are MAPS anabolic. So
he's asked smart questions before too. He's been around.
Yeah, I wonder because that's kind of how MAPS anabolic is broken down. You do 3 weeks of central nervous system training, then there's 3 weeks of myofibrillar hypertrophy type training, and then 3 weeks of sarcoplasmic hypertrophy training, and then you go and you cycle through again. That is by far the most effective way to train for overall muscle growth and strength, because you're specific with your target, mm-hmm. but you leave the phase before your body adapts and stops responding.
For somebody who doesn't have our MAPS program, I think that's the key takeaway from this, is that that's how I would rank those. There's not one more superior than the other, although somebody, you might read somewhere that someone tries to argue that, but the reality is they're all important, and the one that's probably most important is the one that you're not doing.
Right.
So that's what's going to show the greatest change in adaption for your body.
At the end of the day, if I had to trade sarcoplasm for actual thicker fibers, of course I'd want thicker fibers. You know, if you have two muscles that are the same size, but one has more sarcoplasm and the other one has thicker muscle fibers, the thicker muscle fiber
be stronger.
It might, there's a lot of factors that go into that, but if all things being equal, it will be stronger, and it will look different. It's going to look hard, it'll look dense, it'll look grainy, because it's more solid, mm-hmm. Muscle that's within. But again, they all contribute to each other. So You know, here's some tips. Okay, if you're training for central nervous system strength, you want to train, you want to pick very basic compound movements. You want to do lots of sets. So I'm going to do 6 sets of squats, but I'm going to do very low reps, you know, 2 or 3 reps. I'm not training to failure. By the way, I don't train to failure in any of these things. So I'm picking a weight that I maybe be able to do 5 or 6 reps with, and I'm doing maybe 3 or 4 reps, but I'm doing 5 or 6 sets. And you do this with your body. And you tend to want to train movement versus muscle. So when I'm training for central nervous system, and I'm not so much worried about hitting my lats, hitting my traps, hitting my delts. I'm more focused on pulling off the floor, squatting up, pressing in front of me, rowing behind me. Then when you move on to myofibrillar hypertrophy or actual muscle fiber hypertrophy, this is more your bodybuilding type of 8 to 12 reps. I'm doing more exercises. I'm doing straight sets. You know, I'm hitting my chest, I'm hitting my delts, I'm doing different angles. And then when you move to your sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, I'm doing higher reps. I'm doing supersets. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a lot more volume. Yeah,
you're cutting out your rest.
My pace is faster. I'm trying to go for a pump. And, you know, some people will say, well, why don't I combine all those in one workout? Like, why don't I start with strength, go to myofibrillar?
Muscle confusion, man.
Right.
Let's confuse everything.
Because
I'm confused.
Because you won't get as good a results as if you focus on one at a time. You'll get very little of each.
Adaption is still the priority. And you just got, it's just like the analogy you've given before with learning a language. You wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't throw all kinds of random sentences that don't even make sense together, you know, to try and learn the language. You would put things
I'm
in order.
Learn German and Spanish,
right? So.
And you know, insert anything,
right?
Japanese.
So you're better off, and this is based on a lot of our experience, and there's some science to support this. But from an experience standpoint, like if I take a client and I do strength, you know, strength training, you know, central nervous system training, muscle fiber hypertrophy training, and sarcoplasmic hypertrophy training, and I do that all in the same workout or in the same week, I don't see the same kind of measurable results, and I don't have the same focus as I do when I can take and focus on it on 2-3 week periods, and then they contribute to each one. And then it makes it more fun too. Like if I'm just doing pure central nervous system training for 3 weeks, it's fun to fucking PR on these heavy lifts for 3 weeks. And then I go to muscle fiber and then, you know, hypertrophy. And then I can see
each one you're able to see like a benefit. Like even if it's endurance, you know, you're able to feel like, oh my God, I feel like I'm in good shape. You know, like I'm not winded and I'm doing all these things. It's like every one of those things has its own benefit that you just need to focus on.
Yeah.
That.
And then it's fun to go through again. Like, okay, now I'm done with my sarcoplasmic type training, my pump. Now I get to go back to strength, and it's really fun to see those numbers go up, or it's really fun to get into sarcoplasmic hypertrophy when I've been in the other phases, and it's like, oh man, I really miss getting that skin tight, fast pace, but much lighter weight type workout pump. It's really fun also to train that way, because we need to consider this. When you're designing a program for someone, if you're a trainer, or for yourself, adherence to the program is a factor you need to consider. And so if, let's say, mixing up all those phases in the same workout or in the same week gave the same results, but the people adhere to it less because they're not seeing the measurable results as much, well, then the other way is going to be more successful because people are more likely to stick to it. So that's a big factor as well. And that's another thing. Like, I consistently, people tend to stick to programs that I give them when I give them specific targets for 3 week periods. Like, okay, for 3 weeks, this is all you're focusing on. And now for the next weeks, this is all you're focusing on.
It's easier mentally, too.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. So, with that, if you like Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating review. Actually, if you don't like Mind Pump, leave us a 5-star rating review, too. You may get a free sick ass t-shirt. You can check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump
Black on Black.
You can check us out Mind Pump Radio on Instagram. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal, Adam at Mind Pump Adam, and Justin at Mind Pump Justin. And you can check out our site on the internet at mindpumpmedia.com.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com.